Hey guys, just a quick heads up. We've just launched our brand new investment opportunity called Alessia Gardens in the Greater Atlanta MSA. Now, through RSN Property Group, I've been investing in multifamily for over a decade, acquiring nearly $1 billion in assets and delivering investors an average 27% annual return. Now, if you want to invest alongside of me in this latest deal, head over to www.rsnpropertygroup.com/call to schedule a quick chat with one of our team members. That's www.rsnpropertygroup.com/call.
This is exactly the thing that we want to invest in. Incredible opportunity investment wise, and it solves a massive problem. And so everybody gets excited because ultimately, if you're building the framing for houses and apartments four times faster at a 10x better quality with 99% less waste, which is what FrameTech is, you're changing the entire industry and you're solving the problem, and everybody's behind it. So we're doing something first in the world, and it is changing the industry.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I'm pumped to welcome back Damian Lupo. Now, Damian was first on the podcast over 8 years ago, episode number 61, long time ago. But for those of you who aren't familiar with Damian's story, Damian has an entrepreneurial powerhouse. He has a journey from a $20 million loss and homelessness to rebuilding his entire wealth tenfold. And he just showcases his strategic brilliance and unyielding determination to be successful. So really short introduction, because I want to get him out here. You know, he's become someone I've looked up to over the last couple of years in terms of some other cool stuff he's doing outside of the real estate space. But enough out of me. Let's get him out here. G'day, Damian. Welcome back to the show. How you doing today, mate?
It's good to see you, man. It's great. It's great to be back.
Give us an elevator pitch of what you've been doing over the last goddamn 8 years.
Man, building things, breaking things, setting people free with their financial freedom. That, you know, it's interesting. About a decade ago, right after my dad died, I really thought about what the next thing was. This is right after I was homeless and then, you know, lost all that money. And then when he died, I started thinking about the mission of my life. And was it just about making some money, or what was it? And that mission was and is to break 1 million people's financial shackles, to free them from financial bondage. And so over the last 8 years since you and I spoke, it's really been this laser-like focus to burn through anything that gets in the way and to set people free, breaking those shackles with their money, their retirement money, and then building things that create more value like you do in the real estate space and such. And it's and that's what I've been doing, building a community of thousands of people. Many of them have become financially free, and many more are on their way because of the stuff that my team and I have built over the last decade.
And for those people who are not familiar, Damian has a black belt. Is the name of the financial freedom business model, right?
Yeah. So Black Belt Wealth was kind of like my infusion of martial arts and business together, and it was a philosophy that spawned the EQRP company that gave people control of their retirement accounts to be able to invest in things like real estate and gold and Bitcoin and all that kind of stuff, and ultimately this philosophy is around it's personal sovereignty. It's about personal freedom. It's accountability. It's no more being a victim. It's saying, hey, it's my life. It's my choice. It's my responsibility. And we've given people the tools and then the community to support them. And then ultimately a lot of investment opportunities, including the one that I've been working on the last 3 years, that's closing in on $1 billion valuation.
That's insane. Quickly for those people, EQRP, just give us a history lesson because I know you can go back and listen to the episode 61, but let's just go back and lay the foundation of what the community you have built, you know, and are building over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, so EQRP, people have generally heard of IRAs and 401ks in the US in particular, and there's different types of retirement accounts, whether it's in the UK or Australia. There's people have these government-sponsored tax shelters, if you will, so that they don't wind up at 60 or 70 years old without any money. And what I did about a decade ago was launch a company that gives people control of that retirement money, so they're not just stuck with shares and equities and the things that Wall Street necessarily wants you to do, but they gave people the ability to self-direct their money differently than the self-directed IRAs. The EQRP is a different type of retirement vehicle using the tax code so that people can go and invest the way they want to in things that matter, that they make, that makes sense to them, and things that are real, not just fabricated artificial pieces of paper that may or may not be worth something depending on what somebody on Wall Street does. So we put all the control in people's hands with their retirement money. And it's been amazing watching the thousands of people that have taken that and run with it and then worked together on so many deals and created friendships and bonds and a lot of freedom in the process.
What is the main differences between EQRP and say an SDIRA?
So when you have IRAs, self-directed is kind of the big overarching umbrella where people get to make choices. They're not just stuck with, hey, one of five mutual funds. A self-directed IRA, the difference between that, big difference between a self-directed IRA and an EQRP, a self-directed IRA, there's a custodian that's going to, you have to get permission from that person, that party, that company to do things. It's not totally self-directed. It's sort of like you still have a parent or somebody overseeing you and you have to sort of say, hey, may I do this? And they may say, no, we don't like it. And so that's very frustrating. With an EQRP, you actually have a checkbook. You're in charge. You're the trustee, which means you get to make the decisions and nobody's going to tell you you can't do something because they don't like the way it looks, as long as you're following the rules. And our job as a company is to help keep you on the field, if you will, outside, you know, so you're playing by the rules. And we just basically say, here's what you can and can't do. And you get to choose what you do. And then you write the check. So there's no friction. It's very fast. It's very efficient. And people like that a lot more because they don't like being told what to do. At least most people. After you turn, after about 5 years old, you start hating people telling you what you can and can't do.
Did that change from a legislation perspective? And that's, you know, that's how it came about. Or has EQRP been around for decades?
So the tax code back in the 1970s established some of these original things with ERISA, building the framework for these retirement accounts. And what's happened is it was really just something that wasn't marketed because what we did is we took the laws and we created this structure that's blessed by the IRS, and it just wasn't shared with people because why would Wall Street want to tell people they can take their money out of Wall Street's hands and go do stuff they want and Wall Street loses all the fees? So EQRP was built and basically built to give people information and power. But the legislation, the laws that have been in place have been around for more than 50 years.
Well, okay. Yeah, because that's where I was going to go with the question. It's like, you know, and like you mentioned earlier, like government-backed retirement accounts across the world, they want their citizens to retire with money. It's a modern era thing and it's smart. And then self-directing, and then you got self-directing through a custodian, and then, you know, having the custodian not involved, I could imagine, yeah, that was – it's only a natural sort of progression where that would have gone, but you know, having people's finger in the pie along the way, and in classic America, it's like, don't get out of my pie. So you know, I can see that. So how do they? And we can move on from this after this, but keeping the guardrails in place, like, you know, philosophically, the government wants people to retire with money, so don't make stupid decisions, and thus invest in blue chips and stocks and bonds. And so how do you guys keep the guardrails on? Is that more under the self-directed of education? And you know, you're the custodian now of your own money. Don't go and blow it on, you know, Red 34. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like this is where we tell people, here's what you can't do, and then they have to decide what do I think this investment is good or not. What's happened with most people's investing is they've been taught to not think, to hand their money over, and then they're given a list of very sanitized investments, which are called stocks and bonds, and that's it. So there's more of a pressure on people to make smart decisions, and you know, we make bad decisions, we lose things, we take losses. That happens whether it's stocks or real estate or anything else. And so part of this is not just saying, here's your tool, go, good luck. It's like if you think of the EQRP as a Ferrari, we don't just give somebody the keys and say, good luck. We have training, and there's a coach next to you in this seat. You're still driving, but you've got somebody and you can say, hey, I have a question. And we're literally right there. That way people, and it's not just us, but there's a whole fleet of Ferraris. So you have all these drivers and they're all working together. So collectively, the community is a lot smarter, better investors because they're together. And now there's thousands of people in the community because it's people like being around people like them. And this is a community of self-responsible, freedom-minded folks that want to be in control of their own destiny. So it's a pretty cool place for people to be.
Moving on from EQRP, I know selfishly you and I spoke probably about 6 months ago, I want to say. You've got into the manufacturing space, right? Do you want to talk a little bit about, and I'm sure that's just one of many things you've got involved with, but did that come out of the community of EQRP or how did that evolve?
Yeah, well, what's interesting is if you look in the U.S. or really a lot of places in the world, we have a housing problem. We're not building enough. In the U.S., there's about 10 million missing houses or units. So that's just a huge problem. The other problem is we're building just over 1 million a year, and we need about 1.6 million because of new people, because of functional obsolescence, things burn down or fall down or whatever. And so I had some guys that I'd known for 30 years that came to me 3 years ago and said, you know, we have an idea. But we need, the problem is our idea is to solve the housing crisis, but we need $40 million to do it. And I said, okay, at first I thought it was a crazy idea. I thought there's no way this is real. And then I sat down and met with these guys and looked at their stuff and really looked at them and their background being in the component, the walls and the trust building for the last 50 years. And I realized these guys were the real deal. These were the operators and they were literally down the street. Our plant that we've built called FrameTech here in Arizona, it's a half an hour from my front door. And these guys all lived in the area. And I thought, okay, you know what? This is not some pie in the sky thing that's 1,000 miles away that I don't have any connection to. I know the problem. It's in my backyard. And so I said, you know what? This is something I want to put money into. And I bet my community would too. And ultimately the community said, hell yes, this is exactly the thing that we want to invest in. And so there's a couple of things. One, incredible opportunity investment-wise, and it solves a massive problem. And so everybody gets excited because ultimately if you're building the framing for houses and apartments 4 times faster at a 10x better quality with 99% less waste, which is what FrameTech is, you're changing the entire industry and you're solving the problem. And everybody's behind it. So we're doing something first in the world, and it is changing the industry.
What's revolutionary about it? Why you're just taking robots and putting it together, or what's making you different?
Yeah, so part of it is robots. We have robotics in there. It's the most technologically sophisticated plant in the world of its kind. So we're using AI in a lot of our systems, and which is kind of the buzzword now. But when you think about a learning system. Manufacturing typically is like, here are the inputs, and then the machine does the same thing over and over and over again. Ours is learning and getting smarter and getting faster. And we've got a patented process it's a material handling process where normally if you think about a house or apartment being built out in the wild, if you will, on site, you've got some guys with hammers and they're putting boards up and they're hammering them or stapling them or shooting a gun with a nail. And what we're doing is we're building all the walls and the trusses inside of a plant, and we're taking all of our boards and sticking them end to end with a finger joiner. And basically what happens is we have one continuous board, we cut the exact pieces we want, and we build these things in a contained environment. So the quality control is like, it's probably 100 times better than out in the field. So we have almost perfect everything, and we do it way faster. And because we're using this continuous board technology, which we patented, it's our technology, we end up with almost no waste. So normally if you have boards come in 2 foot increments. And so if you need a 10 foot two board, 10 foot 2 inches, you have to take a 12 foot board and cut off 22 inches. And that just ends up in the landfill, which is all this waste. And all that waste is lost money too. So you're killing forests that you don't need to, and you're wasting a lot of money. And we're solving all those problems at once, and we're doing it for the same price. So imagine that you get something 4 times faster, 10 times better quality. Your house looks like furniture, and you're doing it without destroying the planet, and you pay the same amount. Everybody wants that product.
Mm. Well, look, and I happen to be a structural engineer. So the word that we're, for the listeners out there, it's called panelization, right? These are taking standardized monotony work of when you build a wall, and maybe no one has built a wall, but there's studs and there's stringers, and they get built literally 2x4s. 2x4 on the ground, you do 12-inch on center studs, you put a thing on, you put a trim on the top, that's a wall. And you put drywall on it, you put your electrical behind it. It's taking that process, right, Damien, and putting it in the manufacturing. That's not necessarily the most crazy thing. It's panelization's been around for a while, but I think what you're mm-hmm. saying is taking the continuous, the feeding of those 2x4s and making a continuous piece, so you don't have waste on site. That's the real meat and potatoes here, right? Of that process.
It's a big part of it. And what we see the future to be, and this is not just us, but the innovation is about more and more framing being done as components inside of manufacturing plants, because the efficiencies, even without our patented material handling process, with the saved, the waste that we're not wasting, the wood, just building stuff. And this is like a custom house, an apartment. This is, sometimes people go, oh, this is manufactured housing, and they get confused. Right. Now, this isn't manufactured housing. Manufactured housing is where you pick one of five houses and a plant builds that one of those houses. We're actually taking plans from builders, whether it's an apartment, a hotel, a house, and we're taking those and feeding them into our system. And our system then goes and builds each of these pieces. And then we stack them up and we go put them together like Legos. So it's a very different deal, but this is the future of housing. If we don't do this, we're going to go further and further behind. And that's one of the reasons things are so expensive in housing. Because when you have, it's basic economics, if you have not enough supply and the demand keeps growing, the pricing is going to go up. And that's, between that and all the regulations, that's why the housing is so expensive.
You touched on a couple of things there. I'm going to get super geeky just because of my engineering background. Like, part of, when I first moved to the United States, and it's a fascinating thing to see how Americans build things versus other countries. Like, if we take a single family house in Australia, there's a lot more CMU, cement masonry units, right? It's built, you go to Europe, and I'm not saying wood is crap. It's not crap. It's just a different way of using. And the reason that I've sort of boiled it down to in my mind is that access to labor, people who can build with wood, there's a lot bigger pool, say, than concrete and steel. And it's a cheaper material, right? That's what it boils down to. You can get it up. It doesn't last forever, like a CMU masonry block. And so my question to you is, how have you found the interface between the site, right, and you're building a foundation, versus your product going out? And because part of, building is wood, is a good thing about building wood. When you're building on site, oh, that's 2 inches too small, I can chop it off and, I can make it fit, because the foundation guy stuffed it up and he's 2 inches off. You know what I mean? How's that, all that coordination going? Because there's on the computer and there's in the manufacturing, and then there's on the field, right? And they're two separate spaces that have human error.
It's a great question. And one of the things that happens is, a part of our innovation and part of the way FrameTech is different, our culture is about innovating, not just for us, but how do we innovate to make the entire industry better, more efficient, faster, more profitable, and deliver more product? And so one of the things you talk about, these things, oh, our slab is off, so we have to adjust our wood, or these different things, or it's 2 inches too much. So you have to kind of go backwards to the origin. We need to make sure the slab is accurate. And so a couple of things. One, when somebody does a bad slab and they have to go fill it in or something, they get to do that one time. And then we come in and say, if you want to, and the developers are doing this now, they're saying, this has to be perfect or you don't get to work anymore. And so it's creating more of a perfected origin or base for us to go put our stuff on, because we do have to have something accurate. And then normally, I'm going to geek out a little bit. Normally, when you have your concrete slabs, there's somebody with a chalk line, and they're snapping their lines. And this is basically, you're drawing the layout for where all the walls are going to go. And that's what we used to do. But now, one of the things that we've done that's different, it's called Dusty Robotics. It looks like a Roomba. It's a vacuum type of look thing. We send it out there. We have lasers on the corners of the slab, and this thing draws all the lines by laser precision, not only the lines for the walls, but it shows where the AC is going. It shows where the fans are going. It has QR codes for the appliances. It's got multiple languages, English, Chinese, Spanish, like all these things on there. And so we're adding that in, which makes it even more precise, so everybody can do their job faster. And we can tell if we have any type of anything off before we deliver the boards, because that thing is measuring everything as we're going. So we're using technology to circumvent the problems that you're talking about, because that's a very real problem. But we're getting rid of the slack and the problems early enough to where we don't have those problems. When we deliver wood, it's to a perfect site, and we've made sure of that before we show up.
Yeah, no, and that's brilliant. Yeah, answer my question, because I used to be back in the day as an engineer, I was literally paying as a project manager. You'd play coordination between the MEP, between the concrete guy, between the electrical guy, and it's this, again, getting geeky, you skip one area because the plumbing guy comes in 2 inches lower than where his pipe is. And you go, I will leave that for another time. And it just becomes this sort of cancer in the project. And you 12 months down the line, you're like, oh, I should have probably dealt with that initially. And it all comes down to coordination. And, I've always joked that you can have all these softwares and all this sort of stuff. When it hits the site, if you don't have people who can implement it on site, it's only as good as the person who implements it. And so, yeah, removing that human error. And I think with technology, and I've been a former engineer for over 15 years. You know, when I first moved to the United States in 2012 and I was practicing engineering, I don't think the technology was quite there yet, right? And now today, it's really come a long way in the last 10 years that I think that the ambiguity of it all starts to really take itself out of the equation, and you can sort of really, you know, be definitive. And it's awesome to hear some of the technology stuff coming to a very dinosaur era type of, we've always done it this way, and what are you talking about? There's a machine that does it for me, like there's all that sort of stuff that comes out on the job site. Would you agree?
Yeah, and one of the things that, so a lot of times people are looking for technical things when they're investing or they're in business and they're saying the technical, and you and I both know that it's more about mindset than it is about the you can have all the best techniques, but if your mindset is all jacked up, you're screwed from the beginning. You're playing to lose. And one of the things that's different about what we're doing is we're thinking about how can we make everybody's life easier? What happens in, whether it's construction or other industries, too often people are thinking, okay, I need to win. And if I win, you lose. And if you win, I lose. And it's very small thinking. And the way that we look at this is we say, okay, how can we make it easier for the MEP guys, the mechanical, electrical, plumbers? How can we make their job easier, faster, more precise? So we're snapping lines on our wood. So on the walls, the mechanical or the guys that are putting the plates in for the outlets, they don't have to measure. Because if you look at a house and you start measuring all your outlets, you're going to notice they're not all the same height. Because people are sloppy.
All the same distance around the wall.
No, everything is like, it's very messy. And don't ever go into an attic and look at trusses, because those things are a disaster. So what we're doing is we're saying, okay, what are the problems that are creating sloppiness or slowness? And we're fixing them. So we're using our bolt drills and our saws, and we're putting holes in walls for all the electrical and the plumbing, so that when plumbers and electricians come in, all their holes are lined up. They don't have to waste wire going up and down and left and right. And when you do that, everybody goes, hey, thanks for doing this. My job is easier and faster, which means I make more money. And you did this as a favor. So guess what? Everybody says we want Frametech, but it's also it's a way of thinking that there's more than enough. There's so much. It's an abundance mindset. And we keep thinking about that. And if the more people think about that, the more we solve the problem, because the problem is so vast. There is no competition here. It's all about a problem that we need everybody to work together to solve. So I think that that's important when we're doing business or investing. There's really not a scarcity. That's a Malthusian 18th, 19th century idea that's kind of BS anymore. We need to think about things in an abundance way.
Yeah, look, and I could talk to you for hours, my friend. I do want to be respectful of your time. So where's Frametech going? I spoke to you probably 6-7 months ago. I think you were just getting your first manufacturing plant off the ground. You mentioned in the green room, there's a second one in the pipe, in the works. Is that correct?
Yeah, so our first one is producing. We're expanding that site. We're building another site in Arizona. We're also expanding into Texas right now, and we have a vision for 20 sites there. So you're talking about over $1 billion of investment and 4,000 or 5,000 jobs in Texas. So there's where we're heading, and that's just those two states. If you go to frametechtec.com, if you look there, you can see a map of the country, the sites, the locations where these are scheduled, and we have a vision of them being, they're all over the country. I mean, any place that's growing is having a problem with building housing. There's no place that says we are golden. We got all the housing and all the labor, and it's everybody's got a problem. So there's a pretty big vision for this, and so we, multiple states are being pursued right now, and ultimately I'm pretty proud of this team and what we're that's what awesome. We're doing. Yeah.
It's interesting that you're building so – is there a geographic constraint for building a manufacturing warehouse in terms of where it ships out to? Assume after a certain distance, like you can't build it in Washington State and ship it down to Arizona or vice versa, because it just the shipping becomes too costly.
Great. All you got to do is ship it to Amazon, and then people click a button and they get Amazon Prime. No, I mean, all seriousness, there's an economic reality around shipping. It's kind of like how mattresses used to be before we shrink wrapped them and UPS'd them everywhere. But where they used to have a mattress manufacturing plant basically in every city, metropolitan area. And because the cost of logistically getting them around was so high, when you think about all the walls and things, 60-foot tractor trailers, we can ship it from really anywhere and even put it on a boat, but the economics, the cost, it doesn't make sense. So our economic, the smartest play and what our model is based on is 200 miles. And most of our stuff ends up being within 100 miles. And it just allows us to do multiple runs a day, you know, get our stuff out to a site and then come back and load up. And so typically it's going to be like our stuff that's produced in Arizona is pretty much going to be here and you can just do a lot more. If like doing one house in Montana, as much as we'd like to do one house in Montana to help somebody, the sending a truck out and having a truck gone for, you know, for 4 days would be a little stupid business-wise. So there is a radius where it's about 200 miles in terms of the stretch. And so we're focused on being in places that have that type of reach.
Yep. Look, I bet you I would talk to you in 8 years time, you would have figured out that the inefficiencies of having manufacturing, you know, there'll be a new shrink wrap of your systems at some point, which is exciting to hear, you know, exciting to talk about. I know off topic we were speaking about the actual modular units and building for multifamily and how that could be one of your systems moving forward. But dude, I'm so super excited for you and. You know, you can already see I'm jazzed up because of my nerdy engineer brain. But anything efficient on site just makes me smile because there's so much inefficiency. Yep. So
and that's the opportunity. I mean, for people there that you know, like if you're looking out there in the world trying to figure out what to do, what to invest in, you look at the big problems. And I mean, there's not many problems that are bigger than the housing crisis. And just thinking about that and being a part of the solution, not only is it incredibly lucrative, but it's also cool to be a part of something that's solving a problem and, you know, basic human need like housing. It's so vast. And what's fun is like, I was in Vegas with the founder of Boxable a few months ago and with a bunch of other industry leaders. And we're talking about how we help solve the housing crisis. And one of the things that I didn't realize until that meeting was that about 30% of the cost of a new construction is regulations. And that's crazy. So people go, housing is too expensive. Well, thank your governments, all the governments. There's 4,300 pages of codes in the US that people have to deal with. So you think about that kind of stuff. All right, well, you know, maybe we'll get to doge that thing, you know, like get to remove some of that stuff. But it's the problem's so vast. And I think it helps for us to think about work being cooperative and working on this thing together. And we've got stuff in the pipeline that's we're basically disrupting ourselves. We already are disrupting the industry, but now we're on phase two of disrupting our own disruption and doing things that are even better that I mean are going to blow people away when they see what's coming down the pike. And we have more patents in the process, so it's a really cool space to be in.
No, I think it goes back to your what you said before about mindset, approaching a problem with mindset that it can help everyone and everything from the on-site builder to this is how it was done to the local jurisdiction of, well, this is our NIMBYism of how we get things approved. And it's like, if you across the board have the right mindset of, hey, this is going to help everyone, then I think that you sort of break down some of those barriers in a world, particularly in new construction, where there is a lot of red tape, there is a lot of, and this goes across the world. This is not unique to the US. This is everywhere you go. There's just building someone's, you know, American, Australian, European dream comes with its own can of worms in trying to just be a little bit more efficient on one of those line items, i.e. producing better walls or quicker walls, is so lucrative in itself. So yeah, no, awesome stuff, dude. Look, at the end of the show, we like to dive into the top five investing tips. You ready to get into it, or if you even remember? But the first question is, what's the daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
Moving first thing in the morning. I get up really early, sometimes between 1 and 2. You know, I start, you know, this was an accident. I think it's part of it. I don't know what happened, but something happens maybe at a certain age and I get up early and it's about moving. So for me, making sure I'm going to the gym regularly. And one of the hacks is going, even if I hate going, I don't want to go, even if I'm only going to do 10 minutes of something, it's that pattern. It's making sure that my day starts with a win. So I follow Admiral McRaven's advice, making my bed, and then I go to the gym. And it starts the day off on the right foot and with the right energy. And I think that that's one of the keys to setting the rest of the day up for all the battles that we're going to go into.
Question number two is, who's the most influential person in your career?
You know, I think that this is, I don't think I've ever said this before, but there was a guy in high school when I was probably 15. And I remember he said to me, you know, you have a ton of potential. And it actually made me really mad. I said, what do you mean I have potential? And the way I interpreted that was, I'm not doing jack squat. I'm not doing anything. And I'm being lazy. So I use that as an irritating motivation to go out there. I never wanted to hear somebody say, you have potential. I wanted to hear people saying, man, you're just killing it. So it's interesting. I just interpreted that in a way that favored me taking massive action for the rest of my life.
And that you've done, my friend. Question number three is, what's the most influential tool in your business? Now, I know I asked you this question many years ago, but it probably was changed. And so when I say tool, it could be a physical tool like a notebook or a phone, or it could be a piece of software you can't run the business without. What is it?
Yeah, I was going to say AI. There's all these tools that we're using. But I think the most important tool is the willingness between my ears to say that's no longer good and be able to say that about something I thought was the perfect thing yesterday and then break it again today. It's the ability, the tool to change my mind based on what's new, because things are changing so fast. And that's it, either you have that or you're going to get run over. And so that's the most important tool today.
Love it. Love it. Question number four, in one sentence, what's been the biggest failure in your career? And what'd you learn from that failure?
The biggest failure, now Reed, understand, I've written books about my failures. So the biggest failure, crap. Yeah, the biggest failure was worrying 25 years ago about what other people thought about me and then slowing down and trying not to get judged too hard. And then looking back and going, God dang it, why didn't I push 10 times harder, faster, learn sooner, and break things earlier? So that's the key. Don't just let go of whatever the hell you think about other people, because they really aren't thinking about you anyway.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Last question, mate, is where can people reach you to continue the conversation? They'll be in your sphere. Where do they go?
Go to frametech.com and find me. You'll find it on LinkedIn and places, but frametechtec.com, no H. I think that's some other company. I think they're in China.
There's a K. There's a K on one of them. I thought it was T-E-K. Yeah, there's a K on one of them.
Yeah, frametechtec.com and look me up. You'll see. It's fun to watch whether you do anything, whether you care about it, whether you want to invest, just seeing what it's like to go from an idea to a $1 billion unicorn that's changing the face of the earth and being a part of that story as it unfolds. There's lessons there that will blow your mind. And so you get to grow along with us. So please do join us.
Love it. I love it, my friend. Look, thank you so much for jumping on the show. Some of the things that I took away from today's show, I think, is your tenacity to never give up. And, you know, I've known you now for a better part of 8 years and seen you from afar and been reconnected more recently through a good friend of mine, Garrett. And just, I think, rolling with the punches and building a community around something that was already EQRP, which was somewhat disruptive in the way in which we administer self-directed retirement funds all the way through to what you're doing today. I think that's super cool. You're keeping your brain asking those questions of, well, how can I break it and continue to break it? Because, you know, it sounds like you're just a student of life and you know, you never want to know, pretend to know everything. So I think that's one of the biggest things I've taken away from today's show. Anything to leave out there?
That's probably one of the most important things for us to remember that, and we sort of, a lot of people realize this, I've learned this more as I get older, I realize I know less. Where when I was 20, I thought I knew all these things and a lot. And to keep going out there and maintain that curiousness, the coolest people to be around are the ones that are the most curious, because they're constantly expanding. They're not the ones bitching and complaining. They're just the natural curiosity we have as kids tends to fade with all the stuff we go through, and we get hurt, we get sheltered, jaded, protective of everything. And I think it's just a better world when we're more curious and more open and we're growing together.
Tapping into your toddler brain is what I've heard be described. So yes, I completely agree. Well, look, mate, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll catch up very, very soon.
Thanks, Reed.
Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from Damien. If you want to go check him out, it's frametech.com. That's T-E-C. Check out everything he's doing over there. Super freaking fascinating. Again, I'm an engineer, so I'm fascinated by it. But we want to thank you all for taking some time out of your day to continue to grow your financial IQ, because it's what we're all about here on this show. And we're going to do it all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.